Welcome to All Things Git, the podcast about Git, where we talk to the people who build it, build tools on top of it, and make their team successful using it. I'm Edward Thompson.
And I'm Martin Woodward. Hey, Ed, how you doing?
I'm wonderful, Martin. Here we are, episode number 2.
Woohoo!
We survived the first one.
Exactly. And we've got a special guest on again today. Emma Jane Hogbin-Wesby is joining us. Fantastic.
I'm so excited.
Hey, Emma.
Hey.
How you doing? So just so everybody knows, I'll have a go at reading your bio. Let's see how this goes. So for over 20 years, Emma Jane Hogbin-Wesby has been bringing people together through education, collaboration, and technology. Her latest book, Git for Teams, O'Reilly 2015, in all good bookstores, outlines real-world strategies for more than just software development. It shows how teams can harness both technology and collaboration to work more efficiently, ensure project goals are met, and make the whole greater than simply the sum of its parts. Emma works for the United Nations, awesome, as a technical project manager, building software tools to help humanitarian responders connect and collaborate in times of disaster. You can follow her on Twitter at EmmaJaneHW. We'll have a link in the show notes. Hey, Emma, good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
So we were just saying, you're based in the UK at the moment, and Ed's based in Cambridge, and neither of you have a UK accent, so that's great. The only guy with an English accent here actually isn't in the UK, isn't in England anyway.
It's true, it's true. Although I am working on it. I've been learning some local words. I'm still a little bit confused by the whole concept of all right being used as a greeting. I still want to actually answer the question, but I'm gradually getting over it.
It's worse actually here in Northern Ireland. People actually say "How you doing?" as a greeting, like just randomers in the street will say "How you doing?" and I've stopped and sort of said, "Well, you know," and then they've gone. By the time I've responded, they're halfway down the street. I have no idea what's happening, but there we go.
Wait, so Emma, you're not from the UK. Say sorry for me. Say I'm sorry.
I'm so sorry.
Yep. Okay, so you're Canadian.
I am.
I can tell by the sorry.
Mm-hmm. My real tell, though, is that I'm a project manager, not a project manager.
Nice.
Yeah.
Be somewhere. Okay. So we've got a mix of accents on the show today, sure to infuriate somebody somewhere.
Cool. Let's get cracking. So, Ed, how should we? What do you want to do? What should we talk about? We've got Emma on the show, finally. I'm really excited.
Yes. I'm also really excited. So, Emma, I don't even remember where I met you. I think it was a Git conference. I think it was Git Merge. And I think you were blowing my mind by showing me a picture of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which I had never seen before. And I promise you, I didn't expect to go to a Git conference and start talking about food and shelter.
Was it Maslow's hierarchy of needs or was it Bloom's taxonomy?
Oh my God.
Just to make it worse.
Now I don't even know. So how did I go to a Git conference and we started talking about food and shelter? So in your bio, you said that you are teaching people to collaborate better, right?
Yeah. So the first time, I think you're right. I think it would have been Git Merge in, I won't remember the year, but it was in Paris. Maybe it was 2015, 2016. Okay. And the presentation that I was giving, I don't even really remember how I came to be there. I don't remember if I submitted a proposal or if I was asked to present, but I had this really rather outlandish presentation that was all about how everyone was teaching Git incorrectly, as far as I was concerned. And here I am in a room full of Git core developers and power users of Git, and I was telling everyone that they were doing it wrong. And I just was I'm willing to say I was a little bit nervous about how it was going to go over. There may have been one or two gifs in that presentation, which were illustrating the emotions I was having as I was going through the presentation. But the big thing that I really wanted to talk about was my experience in working with teams and my experiences in teaching version control over the years. And one of the big things that I've found is that the hardest part of learning version control really isn't the technology itself. It really is the dynamics of how people work together and the agreements that they come to, or the rules that they impose on their teams to be able to get these workflows to work for them. And it's sort of one of those presentations that either people love or hate, in that it really doesn't have a lot of technical bits and pieces about software. It has a lot of technical bits and pieces about how people learn, how they engage with information, and different ways to think about how to make it more accessible for folks. So one of the first times that I gave the presentation or gave presentations on Git was at a Drupal conference a few years before that. And the title of the talk was Git Makes Me Angry Inside. And I had a few different kinds of people, I guess is the right way to phrase it, who came to the presentation. Some were designers and some were developers. And the designers were really excited because I had them draw pictures. And the developers were really not excited because I was wasting their time drawing pictures. But it, for me, sort of reinforced that there is a different way to approach how we think about version control and how we think about teams coming together. And the first time that I really talked about my opinions on Git to a purely developer conference would have been at that one, but it was based on probably a decade of experience teaching and using version control.
So did the designers call their images like Git image version 2 final and things like that, and final?
No, it was more about how does your team actually work together. So the exercise that I had them do, the first thing they had to do was write down the names of everyone on their team, and then the next thing they needed to do was explain what the role was for each of the people on the team. So, or role or tasks maybe is a better way to say it. So some of them would have been doing quality assurance and project management. Some of them would have been doing front-end development or back-end development, or and then whatever the tasks were. And then they had to take those tasks and put them into effectively a timeline. And then the next thing was, what are each of the commands that you're going to run in Git when you need to engage with whatever the thing is? So for example, if you are doing a code review, the commands that you're going to run will be different than if you're doing some original software development and then pushing the code up to the whatever the central repository is. So it was more about providing a visual reference for how you engage in something that is effectively invisible. I mean, a lot of, and I advocate for people using the command line, not for using a graphical interface, because I think the command line gives you an easier opportunity to copy and paste those commands or the reference points from shared documentation. And it means you actually do get exactly the same procedure followed every time. So it wasn't about how to manage your assets. It was more about how do you engage with your team. And having that visual reference was so different than all of the other times that these designers had tried to learn version control. So for them, I think it was a fun experience. And I think in the description, I encouraged them to bring their pens or their markers along and to not spend too much time focusing on the perfect shade for rage, I think was how I described the session.
Which is obviously green.
For you, yes, obviously it is. Yeah. It's subjective.
I wonder if it's like the equivalent of tabs and spaces, you know, with designers as to how do I write angrily, you know, mm-hmm, but anyway. Mm-hmm. That's a really interesting way of doing it, though, because often the getting designer types to use the command line would be somewhat counterintuitive. You know, you would, as a developer, who you would often think, oh, you know, if these people are using tools like Photoshop and, you know, Dreamweaver and whatever, you know, they're gonna want to use a graphical tool to check files in and check files out. So you found focusing on why you're doing what you're doing rather than what, and giving them procedures for the what was a better way of approaching it.
Of course, every team is going to be a little bit different. I primarily work with distributed teams, and so my experience has been it doesn't have the advantage of being able to sit with someone or watch over someone's shoulder, and does have the advantage of being able to use a text-based chat to copy and paste commands in terms of, like, I'm stuck, what do I do now? It's much easier to copy and paste from text reference on a distributed team. If you are working with a co-located team, then using a visual graphical interface probably is going to be a better match for your team. I can't say for sure yes or no, but of course it would depend on the team dynamics, just because you're able to watch what someone is doing and more easily mimic the behaviors or the sort of, like, if you recognize the street that you're driving down, you recognize the houses, you recognize the things you need to click on, which is an advantage if you can watch over someone's shoulder, but it's not available to you for a distributed team.
Unless you have lots of screenshots and things, and then they quickly go out of date.
It's not the same, though. It's not the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, it's a very different way of teaching it, though, and it makes complete sense. You know, often when I went to Git Talks early on, it was a Git introduction talk, and the first thing would be, so let me tell you about the pack file. Let me tell you about the Git folder and things like that. No offense, Ed.
Oh, no.
Because Ed doesn't use the command line. Ed just goes straight to the Git folder and does version control that way. But, yeah.
No, it's true. I mean, you know, every getting started with Git talk is so Git is simple. It's just a directed acyclic graph.
Yeah.
And so,
yep.
And so, you know,
the thing is, I think I've given that talk, so I'm not gonna laugh too hard. But yeah,
I've definitely given that talk. But I think that there's a lot of power in taking that talk and kind of turning it on its head. You know, and I think that that's really, especially in your book, Emma, I think that's really what you do. You know, you take sort of a non-technical approach to teaching Git. You know, if you open the book Git for Teams, it's really a book about teams, right? And a little bit less about Git. It's how Git can really allow your teams to work together, and less about the actual strategies of using Git. It's more, it outlines how you want to work, you know, figuring that out, and then uses Git to apply that instead of, you know, there's this thing you sometimes see people talk about, well, that's not the way Git was meant to be used. And I don't know about you, but that infuriates me, as if there is some way that Git is meant to be used. I mean, Git is a tool, right?
It's my reviewers will agree with the statement that there's not nearly enough Git in my book, Git for Teams. And I think that as an author, you should never, ever read the comments about your book, much like comments on the internet. You just shouldn't do it. But it was fascinating for me to watch as people were putting in those initial reviews of the book, and they just completely missed the point. And it actually was as I was writing the book, it was a very, I'm willing to say, intense conversation that I had with O'Reilly, because O'Reilly also felt that the first few chapters that I'd written were not nearly technical enough for their technical audience. And that was the whole point of the book, is that there's definitely technical resources out there. There are some really, really fantastic technical books out there. But what I felt was missing was how you step back from the technology and actually work with your team to impose some opinions on how to use Git for your particular setup, your particular workflow, your needs. The internals are very, very opinionated. But the workflow or the process parts, it really doesn't matter how you use it. I mean, the storage part is the part that's opinionated. So I wanted to be able to help teams figure out how to form those opinions and how to make decisions and set those rules up for, or the rules or the guardrails, depending on how you want to think of it, that would allow the team to succeed. But it's interesting. I mean, it was a bestseller for O'Reilly in 2015 when it first came out, even though it came out in September. So it's been interesting to see how the book's been received. And I think there's a split camp in terms of those who, it's exactly the book that they didn't know they wanted or needed. And then other folks are like, oh, it's not Git Pro. It's not, it's like, well, no, that's the whole point. It's complementary to what these other resources are all about.
Yeah, Git Pro already existed. Yeah. Why would I rewrite it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And what's fascinating to me is when I go to something like Git Merge or something, I remember I went to the first one, and I was there as somebody who knew about version control and working with teams, but I wasn't, I mean, I'm not as technical as Ed and not one of the core Git committers or anything like that. I think the only thing I did was take out Linus's swear words once. That's about my major contribution.
Thank you. Yeah.
But the thing that amazed me when I was sat there was all these Git committers, and you got like Perf and, you know, everybody like that, and they sat around on a table and they're all exchanging tips with each other on different tricks and ways of using Git to solve different problems. And I'm like, oh my God, this is just like exactly the same conversations we have in the office when we're all teaching each other Git and we've no real clue about what we're doing, and we're assuming we're making it up as we go along and we're doing it the wrong way. And here we are, the committers themselves are doing it that way, you know. So it was fascinating to me, and a real eye-opening experience that there's no one right way to do things, and it's kind of a flexible tool. So what are the guardrails? You know, when you work with teams, what have you got some strong opinions on some things about the way teams work, or does it depend on the type of team, how distributed the team is, you know, what kind of personalities there are, that sort of thing?
I think the strongest opinion that I have is to document the process that you're going to use. And certainly the book does go through a couple of different ones, which are all fairly famous ways of working at this point, in terms of whether it's they've all got their little nicknames, don't they? The Git flow, GitLab has their own. So whether you do environment-based branching, whether you do semantic versioning, whether you do, like, there's all kinds of different ways of doing it. But the strongest opinion that I hold is whatever method you choose to use, document it, write it down, and allow yourself to modify that documentation if you find that the workflow isn't working for you. One of the sort of I don't come from the Git world, maybe is the best way to say it. My first distributed version control system or software was Bazaar, and it has some fundamental differences in the way that it deals with commits and branches and history. And there's stuff about Git that I wasn't willing to rewrite history. I just wasn't willing to do rebasing, because that's not what I grew up on as far as distributed version control. And I had a coworker who always rebased. And we came to the point where we had a documentation page, we had a wiki page that was effectively how we were going to work. And in a very charming and passive aggressive way, we would both edit the documentation to the way that we wanted to work.
And
it was kind of funny, but not really all at the same time. Because whatever the documentation said was whatever the other person needed to do. And I finally got to the point where I wanted to understand why it was that this was so important to him. And the answer was effectively bisect. That to be able to quickly find where a problem had been introduced in the code base, he wanted to use specific Git tooling. And the way that I approached debugging, the way I approached problem solving, was simply to work with whatever the current snapshot was. I didn't go back through history to find where a problem had been introduced. I focused on looking at what the code looked like today. And that realization of how he was using the tools is what made me realize that there was a different way of doing it that was going to make his job easier. And by making his job easier, ultimately, we made a more cohesive team. We were able to accomplish things with less friction. And so I was willing to adapt the way I use the tool to make his life easier. But it was having that conversation about, well, why is it that you really like rebasing? The answer wasn't because somewhere on the internet someone had an opinion and I decided to follow it. The answer was because when our credit card processing system goes down, I need to be able to find where the problem is very quickly. So for me to be able to support him in that work, and I was doing more front-end development and project management at that point, he was doing more back-end development and was responsible for our PCI compliance. And obviously, we liked making money as a business. So I wanted him to be able to very quickly get back to making us money. And if that meant using Rebase, I was willing to make that sacrifice.
Wow. So I think that's amazing that a, you know, merge versus rebase so often comes off as this religious debate, and, you know, it might as well be tabs versus spaces or VI versus Emacs. Is VI versus Emacs still a thing, or has VI solidly won by this point?
Solidly won, my friend.
Excellent.
Solidly.
Right. Outstanding.
It's only because everybody's still in it and haven't figured out how to get out of it.
Harsh.
But I'm bummed.
Yeah, where's me? There we go. I knew that rim shot sound would come in handy. But there we go.
That's amazing. Oh, so I was at a conference giving a talk, and I threw in a can't quit VI joke, and somebody actually stood up and told me from the audience how to quit VI.
Nice.
I know. But I think that's amazing that you can take these almost religious arguments and actually talk to your team instead of just, you know, editing a wiki page. You can talk to them. I mean, this is something novel for software engineers, especially. We tend not to talk to each other. Sometimes we'll send angry missives over email, but otherwise we try to just, you know, commit in our own little branch and then push, and maybe we'll have to go get a code review from somebody and maybe we'll have to interact. But I think that maybe that's a problem in software development. And so I think that it's great that, you know, that you're taking this on as a mission, whether you wanted to or not. I think that that's what you've kind of done. Yeah.
Well, the key was understanding why as well, wasn't it? You know, because, and often just even questioning people on that. Sometimes it is just because that's the way they're more comfortable working, or like you say, because I read a Medium post that was very opinionated on this by somebody I trust, and I'm kind of working that way because I don't know any different. But he seemed to have a specific reason that he could actually explain why this was working, so, which is unusual. Quite often, I mean, I would struggle sometimes to explain why I prefer one way of working over another. So,
and I don't know that he did initially, and I don't remember how the conversation unfolded. I mean, certainly there, it wasn't that I edited the document once and then he said, look, it makes my job more difficult, because it was several weeks, if not months, of us going back and forth on things and me just saying, but I don't understand why it matters. Like, it makes it easier for the rest of the team. They're not necessarily, as a team, we are not necessarily a Git proficient team. It is harder to do this if we need to deal with merge conflicts. It is slightly more complicated. So why is it that we should go through this learning curve? And I wasn't necessarily very good at saying why. I was just saying, nope, it's easier for us to do it this way. It improves our velocity to do it this way, so this is the way we're going to do it. And then he would, you know, sort of back and forth and back and forth. And I think it was a distributed team that I was working on. And I think the conversation would have been the second time that we met in person where it really started to crystallize and really started to come together in terms of the, but no, tell me why. Like, and we, you know, so couldn't escape the conversation. We were sat down in a room together and sort of worked through what it was about the workflow. What did he actually do on a day-to-day basis versus what I was doing on a day-to-day basis? And how could I support him and how could he support me? And that was, you know, that was a big realization for me that I also needed to take the time to ask him more about what he did and what was hard about his job.
Very cool. Now, Git can be quite intimidating to get, you know, to get started with. It's not the most user-friendly of version control tools, perhaps. So how do you get people familiar? Is it by giving them a, hey, these are the kind of, here's a cheat sheet of steps you want to follow at particular times? Or, you know, what's the best approach, do you think?
I think the best approach is to talk to the folks you work with and ask them how they want you to contribute to the project. And the commands that you run will be very dependent on the tasks you need to accomplish. So in terms of a cheat sheet, I don't really think there is one universal cheat sheet. I think that saying to someone, you know, this is your role within the team, this is where you fit in terms of the timeline, this is, you know, if you think about an assembly line and a piece of code goes from a user story to being in production, at what point does the person start interacting? How do they interact with the project? And therefore, here are the, you know, here's your diagram of how you fit in, and here are the commands that you run at each of these points or each of the parts of the life cycle of that user story through to production.
So when you've been sort of getting into Git and things like that, what was it that you, when you came from Bazaar to Git, what was it that you loved about Git? And then what was it that you really, really missed?
So the thing that I still struggle with, although I guess it's not really a, I don't think Git should change this about how the software works. It is still something that for me is just, it's a different model than what I'm used to, is that Git is commit aware, not branch aware. And I've got a couple of screenshots in one of the resources, I can get you a link for the show notes, which show basically the graphical interface for Bazaar has a series of hierarchy or a series of branches that are basically closed by default. And then you click to open them out and you see all of the work that has come to the point where you actually merge it into the main branch. And Git doesn't have all of that information collapsed by default. And so it wants you to clean up your history along the way. It wants you to hide your thinking, and it wants you to effectively be a revisionist, a history revisionist. And it's, I don't disagree. Now that I understand the approach a little bit more and I understand the tooling a little bit more, I don't disagree as fiercely as I used to. but I also think that it's just one way of approaching how you deal with history. And so I think, you know, I think folks are, I mean, get one that competition in terms of the Git versus Bazaar competition. But there's some really interesting ways of thinking about it. And I think that there may be layers that could sit on top of Git in terms of graphical interfaces that mimic some of the behaviors that I really enjoyed about using Bazaar. The other one, which I guess started out for me as a least favorite thing, but has become a most favorite thing about Git, is the initial help file. So one of my big things when I was the Drupal community was trying to decide between Git versus Bazaar, and I was firmly in camp Bazaar, was when you type bzr help or git help, at the time the git help file was alphabetical and had no context, no onboarding, no on-ramp, no easy way into the information. You had to understand the context of each of those commands to know what sequence they went into. And at the time, Bazaar had a really nice sort of grouping of tasks and grouping of tools, I guess, maybe, or commands that you would need to run, and sort of gave you a little bit of a clue about what you might want to be doing next to based on what you were doing. And it was one of the things that I mentioned in the Git merge talk that Ed referenced earlier on, that I said, you know, like, if there was one thing that I wish we could change about Git, it would be to make the help file helpful. And within months, it had a patch. It was I was looped into the review process. I was just delighted to have been part of the community that made that change happen. And it, like all open source software, if you want to make a change, then you need to be the person up at the front proposing the change. Even if you're not the one who's committing the code, you have to talk about what the change is that you want to see. And I was shocked at how welcoming the Git community was and how on board they were with making these changes, making it more accessible for people. So for me, that's become one of my favorite things about Git.
Wow, that's amazing.
I never even noticed that until you just said it now. Because I don't type git help. I normally type git command help. You know what I mean now? Because I kind of been git for a while. Oh my God, that's so much better than it used to be.
Right.
Just dump out, like, you know, git add.
Yeah, it was all the commands. And that's so much more logical. And I've never thought about that. And we've been writing version control command lines for, over a decade, Ed. And, like, I've never even thought about that. I am so stupid. Wow, that's
not stupid.
Awesome.
You just didn't. It just wasn't on your radar.
Yeah, exactly. And now it is. And what that, like you said, the Git community is surprisingly welcoming. You know, that was one of the pleasures for me when I started getting involved, was how welcoming they were. You know, we were coming in as big bad Microsoft at the time, and despite the odd comment about Steve Ballmer, they were incredibly welcoming to us. So it was good.
That's right. And Steve Ballmer, let's face it, he deserves an odd comment or two once in a while. But
as do we all.
As do we all.
Exactly. I don't want to pick on Steve explicitly. I think that the new Git help's great. If you haven't run it right now. And what it does is it sections out in various situations and shows the commands that might be useful for you in the situation that you're in. It's so much more useful than it was. But since you brought up the Git documentation, I have a question about something you said. I think this was also at Git merge. You mentioned that Git calls itself the stupid content tracker, and that maybe that
not
was
anymore.
Not anymore. Okay. So tell me more. Why doesn't it call itself the stupid content tracker anymore?
Well, so I have to admit that I haven't gone looking through everything, but when I made a comment at my second Git merge that I said, you know, having made this sort of request at the first Git merge that I went to, I'm making a new request the second time round to remove the word stupid from content tracker. And that was sort of in the tagline for the software and in a couple of other places. And someone shouted out from the audience that it had already been removed. And you'll need to, because I haven't got, I turn things off when I'm recording, so I don't have things open to double check that. Can you confirm if it's gone, though? I think it's gone.
I think I've seen it. I don't know where it's gone, but I think I've seen it somewhere.
Yeah, it's definitely not there now when I'm doing Git help and Git version and things.
Yeah, it's not in there, but there is some man page somewhere that still says it, I think. I'm sorry to be a bummer.
It may be, it may very well be, because I know that someone said that it had already been removed, and I blindly took their word for it. Yeah. Didn't go looking for it.
Yeah, it's in the description of when you do man Git.
Still there?
When you do man Git, not when you do Git help, but if you do, it's in the man page. So.
And I.
So let's get out of the man page. Let's go to a patch.
Right. There we go.
And it's one of those things where, so the original intention behind the word, my understanding, is that the intention was to mean simple, in the sense of it is not here to manage your dependencies. Let's not talk about submodules. It's not here to do anything other than track content. And in that respects, it is a quote unquote stupid content tracker. I disagree with the use of the word. I think it makes it aggressive in terms of the software. I think it's unnecessary. And even if the listeners don't find the word to be aggressive, that's fine. But it is not a neutral word. It's not like saying left or right. It is a charged word. So I think that there's, you know, when you're focusing on an interface that is primarily text-based, and obviously lots of people will use a graphical interface which sits on top of Git, but there is still that sort of underlying internal, whatever the right word is to use, aggressive nature that I don't think exists in the community anymore. I don't think it reflects where the community is at today. Maybe that was the origins of it, but I don't think that's where folks are today. And I don't think it's representative of the experience that, I know it is not representative of the experience that I have had at Git conferences and from also being on the Git mailing list.
Yeah, I totally agree. I hadn't even considered that. I mean, I also think that the Git community is very welcoming and very friendly for the most part. But I hadn't actually considered that the word stupid in the stupid content tracker might be aggressive, or that might even be problematic until you said something. And I'm sure that a lot of other people haven't thought about that either. Did you get any pushback? Did anybody?
Of course.
Really?
Of course. Yeah. It's just a word and I shouldn't be worried about it. Yep, you're right. Absolutely. I mean, and I'm also not going to comment on the name Git. Like, I'm not advocating that the software be changed to a different name, but there are certainly words within the documentation, within the code base, that reflect an era, you know, time gone by. It's updating one's language to be relevant for the community that it's representing today. And not everyone agrees, and that's absolutely fine. I'm not here to change people's minds, but I am here to say, make sure that your own values are reflected in the work that you do. And if that does reflect that person's values, if they don't feel that word is charged, I'm not meaning to dismiss or diminish that opinion. But I do think that for those who hold the opinion that it is a charged word, are there people who are afraid to get involved or afraid to be part of something because when they read the words without the context of the community, they're seeing something that they're not wanting to be a part of?
I'm going to pull us up on something here, because even though while I agree that the Git community as people are very welcoming and very friendly, one of the things that's slightly different about the Git open source project to how some of the open source projects that use Git run is that it is all still mailing list based. It's all still sending patches over email, and there seems to be a fairly deliberate bar in terms of people contributing code to core Git. Is that true? Is that perception still true? Or and what do we think about that?
Where has the GitHub integration project gone? Is that still in the works? There was one for a while that you could submit through GitHub, which was Roberto, I think.
Yeah, called Submit Git, actually. It hasn't. I think that one or two people use it, but the reality is that there's just so much disparity between the interfaces, the mailing list, and GitHub.
I tend to use the GitHub interface as a read mechanism for figuring out changes.
I agree.
But then, yeah, if we've needed to submit changes, it's always been patches to the mailing list rather than doing a PR. And you know, when we're trying to encourage, because I like helped on the when we were open sourcing .NET and stuff, and we spent a lot of time making sure that the contribution mechanism, you know, lowering the bar on the contribution mechanism because we wanted to encourage contributions. And I'm not sure if that was correct or not. I'm pretty sure it was correct because we wanted to make it clear that we were being open to people. But equally, there is something to be said to having a bar to, with your open source project in terms of accepting contributions, and people have to pass a certain test before they can
depends
can
what submit, you value. You know,
a feature.
If you are, so exactly. One of the decisions that Drupal took a long time ago was that it would value the novice contributor and spend the time on the novice contributor, perhaps to the detriment of faster progress, for lack of a better way of saying it. But it also meant that there's over a million registered users, and this is a couple of years ago now, over a million registered users on Drupal.org. And I would say a fair percentage of the people who have attended a Drupal, who have attended more than one Drupal event, maybe not their first time, but they would be aware that the ability to sit down in a room with a mentor and learn how to roll a patch, and in some cases, all they would be doing is re-rolling a patch, so that they could be more confident once they got home in terms of participating in the community. The disadvantage, of course, that Git has is it doesn't have a lot of those physical events the way that the Drupal community does have. Like, yes, it has Git Merge. Yes, it has events that are focused around it, but it doesn't have that sort of grassroots local community event that's happening. I think it's Drupalical that you would be able to list. There's probably 100 events happening every month. And so that community and that face-to-face experience, wow, and the ability to sit and watch over someone's shoulder and have them help you through the process of learning how to contribute, it is a discussion-based system, like a discussion, sort of a forum, for lack of a better way of saying it, in terms of how those commits get submitted. But I think it's more about the person-to-person connection. And maybe this is unfair of me, but again, based on the people who I've met and the experience I had, I feel like if I had a contribution that I wanted to make to the Git community, there would be someone who could help me roll that patch and get it submitted and ensure that my name was on that contribution. I don't get the sense that there's sort of a, no, until you figure it out, we're not welcoming of your comments or your contributions. That if you were able to get that information somewhere, that someone would help you to get that patch into the submission queue.
And the man page change in itself is kind of a pointer to that, you know, because that was a non-trivial piece of work. Not the man page, sorry, the help page.
Yeah, I think it was their first core contribution.
Wow.
I don't think they had a previous core contribution up to that point. And it did take a couple of go rounds, and they had to re-roll a couple of times, and there was things that needed to be changed, and it had to meet coding standards. It wasn't taken any less seriously than any other contribution. But I'd need someone to double check that, but I'm pretty sure it was their first time. So
no, that's wonderful. That's really good to know, because I think the Git community kind of inherited the Linux kernel process, which is also all on the mailing list.
Yeah,
and that keeps a deliberately high bar because it's the kernel. I mean, you can kind of understand that. And so I've always worried that the Git community inheriting that has sort of set an, perhaps not as, you know, accidentally, maybe it's set a high bar and it doesn't maybe need quite as high a bar as the Linux kernel. But I love that, you know, once again, you're talking about interactions. And so I do want to just go back to your book, Git for Teams, real quick. Tell me about the evolution of how it came about.
The book was a long time in the making, and I would say like possibly even 10 years in the making. So the first time I taught version control was teaching CVS to liberal arts students who'd never done software development before and were looking to retrain as developers and or project managers. And I was firmly committed to the idea of version control, and therefore all of my students would be submitting their assignments with version control. And at the time, CVS was the best option that we had. And it went about as well as you can imagine. There were literal tears as people just couldn't get their assignments submitted. And it taught me a lot about how not how to not do things, but how to be more empathetic and how to be more understanding of the frustrations that I was imposing by forcing software onto people. So then from there, sort of, I completely skipped Subversion. So I went CVS to Bazaar, and then the Drupal community made the decision to go with Git. And it was the process of me having to learn different ways of thinking. It wasn't different commands that bothered me so much as just the different underlying models, that the way that a system stored the information, the way that they approached content storage was so fundamentally different. And the frustration of having to wrap my head around that led to the initial presentation, Git Makes Me Angry Inside, and it sort of evolved from there into what is now Git for Teams. So perhaps a healthier title than Git Makes Me Angry Inside. But I, you know, it's still, it came from my experiences of frustration and realizing that it wasn't the running of the commands. It was the fact that Git didn't have opinions in how I ran the commands. It was leaving me to make up my own decisions, and that was hard, because it didn't matter. It really didn't matter. The information would still get tracked. It would still be stored. So then how do you start forming those opinions? And that's what the book is about.
Fantastic. And then purely selfish question to finish on as well. I'm just got my finger hovering over the buy button now on the Git for Teams book. Should I go for the Kindle edition or the paperback? Am I going to miss out on diagrams and stuff if I go with the Kindle edition, even though it's easier to carry around?
You are absolutely welcome to go for the Kindle edition. The diagrams are all available in the Git for Teams GitHub repository. So if you feel that there's a diagram that you're not able to see or perceive, or it's just the formatting is out of whack, mm-hmm. You can get all of that from git4teams.com or github/git4teams. And there should be a diagram folder in there, or I may have them in a separate repository called Diagrams. Again, I'll give you a link for the show notes, though.
Wonderful.
Fantastic. Will do. So we're about to start wrapping up now. Emma, what's next for you? Should we, where will people be able to catch you, and where should people go on the internet to come find you and learn more?
People can definitely find me on Twitter. I'm Emma Jane HW. And to keep the to keep the show evergreen, I'm not going to tell you where I'll be appearing next.
At a conference near you.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Big secrets all revealed on Twitter.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's great. Yeah, Martin, go buy that book. I've already got my copy, and I love it.
Have you made the butter tarts?
No, I'm not a baker.
You don't have to be a baker. I gave you the recipe. There's instructions. You can do it. You can do it. I have faith.
All right. I will try it, and I will report back.
All right. All right. I love it.
So I had a very proud moment last night, actually. I was listening to Judge John Hodgman podcast, and he does an obscure cultural reference at the start of each show, and this particular show, again, keep it evergreen, you'll have to find it in the archive, but actually managed to get the obscure cultural reference because it was a baking reference to Great British Bake Off.
Nailed it.
That was the first time I ever got one. I'm so proud. But anyway, I just had to share that. But there we go. We'll move on. Thanks very much for coming on, Emma. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. I'm really looking forward to reading the book, and definitely gonna catch you at a conference next time we are at the same place. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Thank you so much for having me as a guest,
and thanks for listening. We'll speak to you next time on All Things Git.